Welcome to the Success in Medicine podcast. I'm Dr. Rajani Katta, author of the best-selling residency match guide, The Successful Match, and creator of the Residency Interview 101 course. This is a special series on the podcast called Energized at Work. We hear so much about burnout in medicine, and it is a real and very challenging problem. That's why I wanted to learn from doctors in all types of specialties who are the opposite of burned out. These are the doctors who are energized by work. I'm looking forward to sharing lessons and secrets from these doctors on this special series. I am very excited and honored to be interviewing Dr. Andrew Zeller today. Dr. Zeller is a board-certified family practice physician who went on to do a fellowship in rural healthcare. I was first introduced to the term fair trade medical care by Dr. Zeller. His mission is to provide fair trade medical care to people with limited economic means. I love that mission, but at the same time, I know it can be very challenging to fulfill that mission. And I think there's a lot to be learned from Dr. Zeller's innovative approaches to creating a sustainable small business still going strong after 20 years while providing integrative health care to his community and all without the use of health insurance. I was also excited to learn more about two other innovative programs that Dr. Zeller has developed. One of these is the Apprentice Healthcare Model, where he provides hands-on training and patient care experience to volunteer students. This helps them in their career path and also helps in the clinic's mission to provide fair trade medical care. Finally, Dr. Zeller also has a deep interest in pain management, and specifically how to provide effective pain management for his patients without the use of opioids. I'll be asking more about his integrative healthcare approaches as well as his advances in pain assessment. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Can you tell me a little bit about what inspired you to develop this clinic and this model of healthcare?
Going through medical school and then residency training, I became aware, as many of us do, of the strength and the power of medicine and the value that we offer, but also of what could easily be called the dark side, the places where we fail in medicine, where our system gouges or takes too much from the patients we serve. And that particularly struck me as a system I didn't want to, or a part of the system I didn't want to participate in. So after residency and doing a rural health fellowship, I'd gained enough confidence and skills to start my own clinic, and did so and wanted to set up a model to demonstrate to myself that an alternative was possible.
But you must have encountered a lot of obstacles, is my thought, because the system is very ingrained in certain certain practices that we have. And yet you do not take health insurance. Your clinic does not work with workers' comp. So what have you learned over the years about making this model that you have started functional and effective?
Well, you know, I remember very clearly I had a lot of friends in residency with a lot of the administrators at the local hospital I was working with. And I would talk with the financial people about it as I was planning this out. My rural health fellowship was really about me dreaming and figuring out all the different systems that were already active in the insurance world and taking pieces of them that made sense to me. And one of the gentlemen said to me, you know, you're crazy, number one, but kindly, he was nice about it. He was not mean by any means. But he said, you are trying to do things in a way where you're not going to take payments up front. You're going to take them after the visit. And you're going to charge poor people who generally can't pay anything. And so I started off with this unfortunate and incorrect stereotype of how poor people were going to respond to my economic offering, my business offering. Somewhere in me, I had a piece of faith that that was not true, what he was telling me. But this was coming from a person who was in a legitimate position of knowing what he was talking about. He was completely wrong. The folks I served were low income, were thrilled to pay their bill after the visit. I had a 98 to 99% payment rate from day one. I have a handful of people who don't pay their bills. Very few of them are schemers. Most of them are folks who have some real legitimate challenge in their life. Typically, a woman who's going through domestic violence with many issues there, and I will not require that person to pay that visit fee when they're here with me. So there's a place for compassion within the model, but the people I serve have been genuinely thankful and appreciative to pay that bill, just as we all are when a plumber or an electrician or someone who cuts our hair does a good job. We say thank you and we give them an exchange of money. And so it was really about, and that's that fair trade notion, by the way, of getting back to that real basic cultural, worldwide cultural way that we have built business all over the world before it became big business. It was people exchanging with people. And that's how the economy flows. And so that's fundamentally what this has been.
So the way you just stated that is absolutely beautiful. And I had not heard that term before, like fair trade medical care. And it's interesting to me that when you started, you had naysayers who didn't believe it could be done. But now a 99% payment rate, that's pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah.
What do you attribute that to? Is it your patient population? Is it the kind of care you provide? I'm curious.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily something particularly unique about the patients I serve, except for the fact that these are folks who are hardworking individuals. I don't think it matters what culture they come from. Many are Mexican background, Mexican American background. I'd say probably 70% of my patients fit within that category. But there's a range of people I take care of, and they all are happy to pay. I think because it's a fair price, and people feel it as a fair price, and that's part of the healing model, is that we ask for something for ourselves as providers because we need to support ourselves in this process. There's not a way to do this without an exchange. But picking a price that actually serves me and my family, that allows me to run my clinic and allows me to take care of the people, and finding that fair price has been an experiment. And by no means, I started off incorrectly. I'll go into that in a moment. But I just think people are very happy with what they get. They leave happy. They may sometimes enter the visit frustrated, as all of our patients do when they've waited a bit.
Yes.
But I would say, again, a huge number of people leave here very happy with how much time they got. My patients routinely get 15 to 25 to 35 minutes of time for the price they get because there's no paperwork to do. There's charting, but it's pretty straightforward charting. I'm charting for me and my patient. I'm not charting for an insurance system. So I put in there what's relevant, what's appropriate. And I typically do it with them in the room. So they see what I'm typing, they see what I'm putting in there. And it's really a scribe function for what happened in that visit that clarifies questions and gets everything done. So it's a very efficient way of taking care of people that gives a lot more time for the person that's with you.
And of the patients that you serve, what percent are considered indigenous or
Indigent.
indigent, sorry?
So that's changed over the years. When I started this clinic in 2004, it was, I could easily say 100% at first, and then it was probably 90% for many years. Now, the community I serve, the Mexican American community, over 20 years has done quite well. There is still tremendous poverty within this community. I'm in New Mexico, which is one of the, if not the poorest, I think we compete with Mississippi for number 49 or 50. So we're already starting at that baseline. But the folks I'm serving, many are in the construction business. They're working hard. Even the cleaning ladies I serve, who many of them are cleaning ladies, they're doing well. And they charge a lot per hour. So these are
Go.
people who have successfully negotiated their way through our society and are at a much more mature place than they were 20 years ago as a community. And so now the people I serve who are wealthier, I would say it's maybe 50-50.
Oh,
It may
wow.
be 50-50. And wealthy doesn't mean super rich. These are people who own their cars and their homes, and they're doing well. That you could easily call them middle class, and some certainly even very wealthy.
Okay. So that's really interesting that I guess your clinic has grown along with your community, or your
It has.
community has grown along with your clinic.
Both. They invested in me, I invested in them, and I don't, no one knows all the math of it all, but I've definitely saved this community so many millions of dollars of not having to go to the ER. I mean, those prices are so ridiculous. So by being there offering fair prices, I would love to do an analysis one day and figure out, how many millions of dollars this community has not had to pay, which of course is money in their pocket and money in their homes and money for their kids.
Yeah. It really strikes me that you are very mission driven, but also really thinking a lot about the logistics of how to make an impact, which I think is amazing because that's how you build a sustainable model. I mean, since 2004, that's 20 years you've been running this practice.
It is sustainable. At the very beginning, the word sustainable was a big word for me, and it meant the wrong thing, unfortunately. I was confused, and I think so many of my progressive friends were confused about what that means. We all thought sustainable meant it was going to last forever, but that's not what sustainable really means. It means that it serves me and my family, and I serve the people I serve, and it's sustainable for them and for me. It doesn't mean it's a corporation that's going to sustain itself for 100 years or 500 years. If it lasts for 10 or 20 years or 30 years, that is sustainable. Now, when I die or retire or move on, this clinic may or may not continue. So someone could criticize that piece of it. But the example's there, the reality's there, and people can, and I think are starting to see the value of operating like this. Certainly, there's been much bigger movements nationwide that aren't exactly what I'm doing, but direct primary care is a kind of an example that's sort of similar. There's more insurance involved in that model. This is a cleaner model, but I have other practitioners starting with me in the last few years that I think are excited by the fact that they can earn a good living, take care of people, and do a mission-based care, and at the end of the day, love what they're doing.
See, that's amazing. But I do have to ask you because there must be obstacles and challenges during the day. And I have a saying where I love my work, but I don't always love my job. And for me, that might be paperwork or talking to insurance companies. What strikes you as something that that you don't necessarily love about the job?
Well, I'm running a small business, and it's not so small anymore. It's still, I mean, legally a small business, less than 50 employees. But there's just a lot of mishmash that happens in the day of running a building, taking care of a building, working with staff. There's personality issues. There's all those kinds of things that come up. The question, it's not a question of ha having a hassle or not having a hassle in this model versus some other. It's what hassles do you want to have to contend with every day? This is a small business, and so I have to deal with, I'm the IT guy, and I got to deal when the computer fails, and I'm like, oh, computer went down again. I have tried to pay people to help me with that, but they just charge too much money. So where I can get help, like accounting, do it, but I still do my own bookkeeping. I can't justify spending thousands of dollars on a bookkeeper. So there's headaches within the day. We had a water line break last month, and we had to scrape the money together and go get that thing fixed. And in generally, if you're a clinician working in a clinic, that is not your problem. But no, there's no insurance
That's so
companies.
true.
There's no insurance companies in my face. There's no prior authorizations. And that was something as a resident I really didn't like, to the point where it was probably pathological. It was more me than the insurance system at that point. I understand the value of prior authorization and
Okay.
see how and why they're useful in a system that's so overpriced. But it wasn't something I wanted to spend my life doing.
Yeah, it's interesting too because as I'm speaking to you, the hassles are sort of around the logistics of running the small business, but not necessarily the actual patient care part of it.
Patient care part of it is
Would
really
you
small.
agree with that?
Yeah, in the course of a year. Now, during COVID, this was a little different because people were a little more hostile. And so there were more sort of patient run-ins, if you will. But outside of those first 2.5 years of
Hmm.
COVID, we've had probably less than one, maybe two at the most, difficult patient scenarios where we refund the money. And that's actually what strategy for us. If we have a patient who's upset with us, we give them back their money. And it's like magic. People feel so taken care of when you say, you know what, you haven't been happy. Here's your money. I consider it part of my malpractice cost. I just give them back the money, reduce the debt. They don't come back and see me again, and we move on. And that's literally been one or two times. During COVID, people were on edge, and there was a lot more intense feelings and emotions that we had to process through with people. I think that was hard on everybody.
Yeah.
So that impacted us as well, even in this really nice practice. But that energy has changed. We're back to pre-COVID times, I think, with people's attitudes and energies.
Which is, I'm really glad you brought that up too, because I feel like there's a much greater awareness in this current time about
violence and incivility and anger and aggression among patients. So that's really interesting that that you only get one or two of those maybe a year.
No, one or two per year. Definitely, like there's always one or two people per year that just have a bad moment with us. I mean, it's there's no way to be perfect in this world. And I'm sure there's more patients than that who are not happy with us that just don't have a hostility with it. We're not, I'm a very practical guy. I know that we don't meet everybody's needs, but we have a pretty enthusiastic population that keeps coming back. And one of the things I learned early on too that's interesting is when you're working in the private practice world like this without insurance, you don't have a panel. So you get immediate feedback from your patients, aside from them saying thank you or not saying thank you. If they refer patients to you, that is their thank you. And so within the natural medicine world, the integrative medicine world, which is something I learned a lot from, those providers don't use insurance by and large. That's been shifting over the 20 years, but they have built their practices on the power of their personal connection with each patient, who then refers people to them if they feel touched or cared for. And in our medical model, we don't have that. We do get some family referrals of like, hey, go see this great person. But by and large, it's all insurance mandated where people go. So we've lost that feedback, and that feedback is part of the biological social structure of humanity. Like most businesses have that kind of feedback. You do good and more people come. You do poorly and they don't come. And in medicine, we're able to do poorly and it doesn't matter. People still come because there's nowhere else for them to go.
That's really interesting that you pointed that out. I have not thought about that in depth, but you're right. We do lose a very important feedback mechanism when your patients are just going to whoever is on their insurance.
Yeah, and us as an individual provider, that matters to us. I think we live up to what's expected of us. And if the insurance company and the system is what defines our quality, that's who we cater to because the patients are just moving through. But if the patients are the ones who matter, then the contract with that individual becomes really sacred and really important.
Dr. Zeller, one other thing I wanted to ask you about was it strikes me that you have really been innovative in multiple different ways, that it seems to me that you're always looking for ways to improve care, to improve the care model, and also to improve the care itself. Can you tell me a little bit about your work with pain management and with integrative health? Because I found that fascinating.
I got drawn into this. It wasn't something I thought about as a resident, or certainly going into medical school. But in the real world of taking care of low income, hardworking people, their bodies hurt, and most of them don't want opiates. So there wasn't an easy answer. And I also was not particularly interested in giving opiates after residency training. I did that a lot in residency and saw the back end of it. As most of us know now, it's not a pretty sight. So working with people who didn't want opiates, I quickly realized, as we all do, that we don't have very good systems in place for pain assessment. We just don't know how to really do it. And the big gap that I discovered, which was a big aha moment, was we don't touch our patients. So we're not engaging with their peripheral nervous system. We're not engaging with their muscular system. The skin and muscle systems are the two largest in the body, and that's where most of the pain lives for chronic pain. Of course, we want to be careful and do all the correct x-rays and radiology studies to make sure it's not a tumor or a bone metastasis. That's all real. But once you get past that, there's good research out there showing that I think it's 60% of pain diagnoses are false. They're just wrong because we haven't done a good engagement with our patients. So I started, this was out of Johns Hopkins University. It's like 40 to 60% of our diagnoses are wrong. I think it's more like 60. And the reason is pretty clear. We really don't touch our patients. So my interest in integrative medicine started in residency. We had some DO graduates who were part of our residency class, and we're all friends, and they're teaching us some hands-on stuff. And I got really drawn into it. And so I'd be working with these very poor, very hard to reach people, non-compliant was the word in quotes. And these were diabetics who were suffering, and I was untrained as a resident. I was like, you know what? I can at least give this person a shoulder stretch. So I would connect with that person during their visit in this poor family practice office at University of New Mexico. And I would sh stretch their shoulders out while we're talking about their life. And the person would open up, and their whole psychology and traumas and just stuff would start to come out because they were feeling connected to somebody. And so then the visit was very productive. I don't know that it helped their diabetes very much, but nothing else we were doing was helping it. But this at least gave them a moment of feeling connected and touched and relief. They would leave with a smile. So it started changing the way that people related to me and I
Wow.
related to them. And over the years, that simple shoulder stretch touch has transformed into a pretty sophisticated body work methodology where I've developed a way to work with dry needling, which many clinicians use, but it's done in a way with a special stretch technique that we've developed here that takes people through a journey with their pain. So this is something where we start transforming the way they even think and feel their pain as starting off as enemy or hostile or frustration, all the negative emotions to I embrace this part of myself and I'm going to listen to and work with my body. And their pain sensitivity recalibrates. They start changing the way they feel pain because they start changing the way they feel about pain. And that's been interesting. I
Okay,
just had a
that's remarkable.
Tuesday is my pain day. I just had a couple of really great cases today that exemplified that. It's just week after week, we keep getting these experiences with people.
Wow, where they have recalibrated their relationship to pain and are experiencing improvement.
Now there's no permanent cures. I'm very
Okay.
careful with this. It's honestly, the bodies, we build these systems, we build our neurological system, our nervous system calibrates over many years through many different stressors, the mental, the emotional, and the physical. And so these treatments absolutely help people, but there's just no single fix. And that's why I think all of those great therapies out there, acupuncture, chiropractic, massage, the stuff we're doing, all of these different things each touch people in a different way, but none of them offer permanent solutions. And so the model that we use for our patients, we tell them to think about their body as a garden. And you can't just plant some seeds and walk away. You have to keep cultivating your garden. And we don't do that, especially as adults. Kids, their gardens are growing pretty healthy. They don't have to do very much for the most part. But as we reach our 20s, 30s, and 40s, our garden becomes full of weeds. And these are aches and pains and things that we just have to address. And so we need a maintenance model to address pain. We need a way to just continue to work with people and for them to work at home. And when people hear it and feel it that way, they realize, okay,
Oh.
this helped me. I'm not going to create a false expectation that this one treatment is going to cure all my pain. Our nervous system is constantly sending us signals of problems, and we hear that as pain.
I can sense that that's a very powerful metaphor, and I can sense as a patient that that would be something that would make a lot more sense than here's a pill, and let's take care of it that way.
And we do use pills also. I mean, we hit full throttle with pain. We
Yeah,
want people
well.
to, we avoid the opiates, but we use those pain meds that are useful for people, but we want to put them into a healing process. Really is we really call it a pain journey, where they start from where they are and they move to a place where they've recalibrated themselves, where they'll still have pain, but they're now the boss of their own situation. They're the sovereign entity in their own body, and they're not a victim to their own experience.
Okay, that's remarkable. And I think one other thing that was so interesting to me is that your clinic is also very very interested and aware of collaborative care. So you do have other individuals practicing in your clinic. Can you tell me a little bit about that care model?
Yeah, so the technique that we've been developing here with body work, we're actually working with promotoras who are, to put it simply, women from the community who in other circumstances would be social workers and lawyers and women who are in positions of power helping take care of their communities. These folks haven't had that kind of access to schooling and education and economic opportunity, but they have that passion to be leaders in their community. And so we work with these ladies as well and have trained them in some of the bodywork technique. They can't use needles, but they have wonderful hands. And so they move from making burritos all day to working with people's bodies. And they're doing these techniques for people, these very emotional, physical, mental therapies with people that are just detoxing a lot of their cultural, personal stress from being in a poor environment. And so those techniques, we just had a meeting this morning that went really beautiful, talking about our different experiences and doing some more training around it. So there's three ladies doing that, two more getting trained now. And they're all excellent at what they do. So they're helping to create this integrated model that is very natural and very beautiful, very wellness-based, alongside this medical model where we're doing the meds and the needles. And so people can kind of choose to go more medical and more natural based on their preference. And the people we serve are very naturally based. They really want a lot of natural care. They want as little medical as possible. And so we can meet them there and do that.
And tell me also a little bit about, with your collaborative care model, about your volunteer health apprentice model as well, because I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Thank you. This is
Talk
a
about a
this is,
triple win for.
yeah, this is a this is sort of the whole blend. The way this model works and the way we're able to charge people less is partly because we care and partly because we have created efficiencies in our medical record system and in the way we see people, and a significant part because we work with young folks who are passionate about their futures and want to become nurses, PAs, nurse practitioners, and doctors. And they absolutely require volunteer opportunities. They need to have, just like I did when I was young, they have to have opportunities to build their resumes. So we offer a 1 to 4 year program. Some people stick with us for up to 4 years, and they come and volunteer 6 hours once a week. We have one paid staff member who manages that all that madness, and the craziness of all the young people's lives and what's happening with them. And as the clinicians, we mentor them, but we don't necessarily engage in all of the details of the complexity of they have 3 jobs and they're taking care of their mom and they're in school and they're, all that stuff that's happening. So we have a pretty good program that's built up over about 18 years. It started about 2 years after I started the clinic. It's been going very strong. We have excellent relationships with some of the organizations in our community who help young people achieve success. And so we're able to offer some people stipends and even part-time jobs through those monies. Those young people are really the lifeblood of the clinic, and we teach them how to have a very professional and very caring interaction with each patient that they touch. They do our phone call backs for us. They draw blood. We train them on all of this. So we'll train some of the ones who've been here longer to do injections. So they get a very good hands-on experience for their future learning, and they're given a real sense of responsibility. What sets us apart from other volunteer experiences is that these young people are given responsibility. They are not hiding in a corner, looking over the shoulder of a clinician, afraid that the insurance system or malpractice or all these other things are going to happen. They're touching patients, they're engaged, they're communicating. 18 years later, we've had some, mishaps now and then, but very, very small for what we're doing. And the comparison is to work with medical assistants who are also great people, but they're not as bright-eyed. They don't see a future path for themselves many times. And then you're also dealing with employees versus enthusiastic volunteers. And there's just been a substantial difference in terms of how our patients get treated by doing that. So we've estimated over the
Hey,
years
that's a
that saved about $100,000 off of our budget to have those folks. And we pass that savings on to our patients. So that reflects into our price.
See, I love that. Yeah. So I call that a triple win because you are mentoring and providing opportunities for young people who are then going to go out into the community. And then the patients that are sitting in your office at that moment are benefiting. And then the community is benefiting because of the financial savings. So it's a really innovative, wonderful program. Way to
And
go.
I'll say something very exciting. Recruiting nurse practitioners and recruiting PAs and physicians is expensive and hard to do. So the first PA that joined me was someone who was a volunteer years ago, went through her programming, got to the end of it, looked around at the workforce and said, and she has a young child, and she said, I want to work with in that environment where I'm respected and I can take care of my daughter. And it's what I need for flexibility. So that was the first person that came back and actually worked with me. And I'm hoping more will come back too.
That's fantastic. I mean, to really, that's great too that you're seeing it come full circle.
It was great. It was Thanksgiving right before COVID.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, whoops.
Is that...
So, Dr. Zeller, what's next for you?
There's two pieces. The technique that we've developed here, we're gonna really look at expanding it as a model for taking care of poor folks with integrative health. It's such a powerful stress reduction technique. We're using it now at the county with people who are in drug addiction recovery, and they're having an enthusiastic response with us. They really love the technique. It's more powerful than massage, how we're doing it, because people in those vulnerable states, this sounds really crude in a way.